There are some very strong warnings in Scripture, both by Jesus and by writers of the New Testament, about people who have ulterior motives. Ulterior motives are when a person is doing something in an underhanded way that is different from what is seen. The Bible often talks about these type of people as being false prophets or false teachers. I want you to listen to a couple of scriptures for just a moment. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 15 is one that is very familiar to us. Jesus says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves." When Jesus talks about end times in Matthew 24, he makes a statement in verse 11 that many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And Paul, when he is writing to Timothy, and he's talking about these type of people, makes a statement in 1 Timothy 6. He has, speaking of these false people, he has an unhealthy craving for controversy, for quarrels about words which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicion, and constant friction among people who are depraved in mind and depraved of the truth, imagining that godliness is a means of gain. These false teachers, these false prophets, really seem to be pervasive in the early church. I don't know how many. I don't know what their situation was, but it at least appears that in so many churches, when Paul writes a letter or someone else writes a letter, but normally Paul's writing a letter, he is talking about someone who is doing something similar to what we were just reading. What happens then is we all become a little skeptical. And we begin to wonder about the motive of other people. Paul wanted to address the church in Thessalonica and tell them why he behaved the way he behaved. Now, as I mentioned when we began this study, when we were talking about chapter 1 in 1 Thessalonians, Paul most likely was only in Thessalonica for around 3 weeks. I mean, we are talking one of the shortest timelines that we get of him spending and establishing a congregation. And I can imagine then how it would have been for them, for Paul to show up. Now, Paul is there with Silas and Timothy, and he is preaching. Because of the situation, he ends up having to leave. He goes on to Berea, and then Athens, and then Corinth. But he leaves Silas and Timothy with the church there in Thessalonica. They all join back up together down in Corinth, where Paul seems to be writing this letter. But I am convinced that Paul is wanting to defend that little bit of time that he had with them. And defend may be the wrong word. Share with them some marks about himself and his ministry, and how his ministry is a genuine ministry. I appreciated so much just a moment ago when Scott read for you the passage of Scripture that this text is going to be coming from, this sermon is going to be coming from, because it gave you an opportunity to just listen, and now in his fullness, and now we're going to kind of walk through it piece by piece. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, beginning with verse 1. Just take a look at the first couple of verses. "For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict." These first two verses talk about the subject of perseverance. And I say that because even though the first part of this, I want to mention something else. It is Paul keeping on because he saw something good there. So that first phrase that we get in what we say verse 1 of chapter 2, he says, our coming to you was not in vain. And as you just ponder what that must have meant to them, I think it's because sometimes we think something is a failure simply because we didn't see it turn out or become what we thought it should turn out or become. And so we classified it as a failure. And on some level, it may have failed. But there's a difference between something that hasn't turned out the way you wanted and something that wasn't even worth doing to begin with. He is dealing with the second. He says that our coming to you was not in vain, that it was not without purpose, that it was not without value. Even though he was there for such a short period of time, this church became a church whose reputation was known throughout Macedonia and Achaia. And again, if you don't have a good biblical map in your head, I get that. But when Paul first came over from what we would call Greek into Roman area, and he leaves Troas and he comes over to Philippi, he's entering into Europe and into the Macedonian area. And he comes down through Macedonia and Achaia, which is down where Corinth is. His point is that whole section of the world, okay, it might be tiny on most people's maps, but that whole section of the world knows about your faith and knows about your perseverance. And so for you to think, well, you know, Paul wasn't here very long. We're not a very big church. I that's just kind of the way things go. He said, don't put failure into that category or being vain. I love to guess, and I smirk because I throw myself into a text and I really throw myself into this situation. And if I was sitting in that church, I could almost hear someone talking about, you know, we're a little church in a big community. And I'm hearing Paul write and say, come on, guys. Let's get beyond the little church aspect. Okay, that's not, you're not the little church. You think about this congregation, and I told you a couple of weeks ago how when we were in Canada, they thought that we were a big church. When you imagine what many other churches probably were in number, you know, attendance, they were mostly home churches anyway, so that number is going to be probably much smaller than we are. We would probably be considered a large church. And I know that that's hard for some people to think, oh, this is not a big church. Yes, we are. And it's not, and we've got to get beyond this thought that says, okay, well, you know, I guess it's okay. He says, our coming to you was not in vain. And he reminds them of the trials that he went through, specifically in Philippi, and then where they were there in Thessalonica. He says, you know what how we were shamefully treated in Philippi. So Paul gets to Philippi, and first of all, he's trying to find believers, and there isn't even a strong Jewish community that have faith in Jehovah God. So he's already at a disadvantage. So he goes outside the city. He finds a group of ladies there that are praying. God touches the heart of one of those, Lydia, to receive Paul's message. She is baptized. And it appears that the church actually gets started in her home. And Paul uses her place as a home base to go out throughout Philippi. And he is teaching in Philippi. And there's this servant girl who tells the future. She's a slave of a couple of guys there. And she's been following Paul around and talking about how he is a prophet, if you will, of the Lord Most High. And he kicks his demon out of her to where she can't do what she's doing. And her masters are so angry with what has happened, they bring Paul up on charges before the people and the council. And you know what happens next? If you just remember that whole situation, he gets thrown into prison. But he doesn't just get thrown into prison. He and Silas get beaten with whips. I just want you to, when you start to say, you know, my life is a lot like Paul's. I've got it as bad as Job does. I just really want to look at you and say, get over yourself. No, you don't. I don't know any of us that have gone through what some of these people have gone through, and yet we talk about it like, woe is me, and life is so hard. In comparison to what? To being beaten? To being locked in a dungeon? To being left alone? Paul ends up and Silas end up singing and praying, and yes, God does this miracle and unshackles them and actually everybody that is there. And through that whole situation, a jailer and his family are saved. Now, Paul was having a struggle trying to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. I am not convinced he would have gone to God and said, here's what I think you ought to do. Get me into big time trouble here in town. Have them just beat the crud out of me and throw me in jail because there's probably somebody down there in jail that I need to talk to. I'm guessing that wasn't his plan of attack. Okay? But God knew exactly where he needed to be. And so he suffered. He was shamefully treated at Philippi. And he says that to this church because I'm sure he told them that story when he helped that church to begin in those 3 weeks. That was so fresh on him. The marks on his body were so fresh on him. He said, we declared this gospel to you in much conflict. Even at Philippi, you have these Jews that come. And all they do is they wreak havoc on Paul and his ministry. And they try so hard to discredit him. And they get him thrown out of town, which is why he's only there 3 weeks. He goes down to Berea. It doesn't get any better there. He gets thrown out of town there. He ends up down in Athens, and from Athens he ends up down in Corinth, where he's probably writing this particular letter back to these people. He says, you know how much conflict I have gone through. Here's the point, though, that I want you to take away from this, is that we have to keep on keeping on. We have to persevere. We have to understand that quitting is not an option. And sometimes, and I know I was making a little light of some of the statements that people make about how hard their life is. And I really am not trying to say you don't have difficulties in your life. In comparison to what? That's a different question. But even those of you who are going through true, genuine, horrible difficulties in your life, and there are many who do, quitting is not the option. I have listened to people say to me, I don't know why God let this happen to me. And therefore, I no longer worship him. I don't go anywhere to church. I am done with God because of what happened in my life and the struggles that I've had to go through. And they place 100% of the blame upon God. And even though my heart breaks for what they have gone through, I want to try to find the right words to say, and how does life without God work for you? Are you better because you walked away? Is it easier because you can be angry now with God? Does that make you somehow more complete and full? Paul says, don't quit. I did not quit. Even when things got hard, I did not quit. The book of Hebrews is filled with a chapter, chapter 11, of heroes of faith. And the writer talks about how many of those people persevered through difficulties and how God came through for them, whether it be through the fire or through a lion's den or even through death. But then he makes a statement, because sometimes I think we feel like it should be all sunshine, lollipops, and roses. He makes a statement in Hebrews chapter 11. I'm going to begin with verse 35. The second half of verse 35. And he says, some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mockings and floggings and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in caves of the earth. The world was not worthy. I don't like anything bad to happen to me. I don't like it when I don't feel good physically. And there are days and even recent days in which my body just has felt off. And I don't even know why. Headaches, those type of things. But you know what I can do? I'll go take, you know, some Tylenol. I'll do whatever I can to relieve my pain, my discomfort. And then I read about these type of people, and I think, I'm really a big baby over a headache? That's my burden and lot to bear in life? Quitting is never the option. Well, I guess you can. But what does it get you? I mean, that's really my question. So you quit. Okay. Are you really happier now? More full now? Do you really think that when death does come, you're going to be fine at whatever you think the afterlife may be? How is it really working for you? So Paul says to that church, I didn't quit just because it got hard. And the thing is, he knows they didn't either. And then we come to verses 3 and 5. I'm going to separate verse 4 out for just a moment, coming back to our text. And I want to take a look at these two verses. He says in verse 3, "For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive." Jumping down to verse 5, "For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is our witness." He says, the reason I came to you was genuine. I was not looking for something from you. I wasn't trying to trick you into anything. That was never my motive, and you know that. We have to ask the question, what is our motive? The Glen Rock Church of Christ, what is our motive for going down to the Arts and Brew Fest, setting up a couple of booths, and having talk and time with children to color and to learn a story about Jesus? What was the motive behind that? When we ask the community to come, and those who need book bags, and we're going to fill them with school supplies, and we're going to give you a couple of hours to just have dinner, relax, have fun, get a haircut, enjoy life. What was the motive behind that? This coming week, we're going to have this huge, we say giveaway, I called it a free yard sale. Come get all the junk you want and not pay a penny. And why do we do that? What's the motive behind it? And I ask the question because there are a lot of people in this world that ask that question. Why are they so nice? Why are they doing what they're doing? Because they have so lived in this world where somebody has an ulterior motive that they want to know, what's the catch? If I go to that church building and I get that book bag, or I go there and I pick out some clothes or dishes or whatever might be here on Saturday, Are they going to like, you know, push me into a side room and preach Jesus at me until I do whatever they tell me to do? To say that doesn't go on in people's heads, then you just probably haven't talked to enough people who are unchurched. He said, I didn't come to you with an ulterior motive. My motive was genuine. He says in verse 3, he says it wasn't out of error or trickery. In verse 5, he wasn't speaking flattery. As disciples of Jesus, we have come to know and experience the forgiveness, the love, the peace, and the fullness that comes through Jesus Christ. Our motive, I want the world to have that too. I'm a sinner that is saved by grace. I'm not better than, I'm not worse than. I am just like you. That's what we are. We're all in this world together, and it is a fallen world. And we have fallen. But Jesus has come along to lift us up, to set our feet on higher ground. I just want to share with you what eternity is all about. It's tough enough in this life, but did you really ever think about what happens 1 second after you die? Everybody else might be planning your funeral, but what about you? What about you? I want to talk about you. I want you to have confidence. I want you to be able to live this life with the same joy and the same fulfillment and the same peace and the same confidence that I have that comes through Jesus Christ and the word that has been given to me. When Paul stood before Festus and King Agrippa and his wife, Paul told his own story. He told about how he was on the road to Damascus. And he talked about how on that road, he was going there, first of all, to imprison the people he is now teaching or preaching about, Christians, the way. He said, but Jesus knocked me down. That light came to me and I learned my mission. My mission, Paul would say to Festus and to King Agrippa, was literally to go and to deliver the good news to the Gentiles. That was his mission. To be a light among them that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among them who are sanctified by faith. When Festus hears this story, he says, Paul, because Paul then talks about the risen Jesus, Paul, you've gone crazy, you know? I hate to tell you this. You're just a little loony. And all this book learning of yours is driving you mad. You want to know what I think is interesting? For the most part, Paul doesn't even mess with. Festus is the guy that really has most control here. He dismisses him like, I don't really care what you think. And he turns to Agrippa. And this is what he says to Agrippa. I'm gonna jump down to verse 27, I guess is where I'm gonna begin. He says, King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you believe. And Agrippa said to Paul, in a short time would you persuade me to become a Christian? And Paul said, whether a short or a long, I would to God that not only you, but all who hear me this day might become such as I am, except for these chains. Paul says, here's my motive. Agrippa, all I want is for you to be like I don't want you to be in chains. That's not what I want. I want you to be like I am and be saved. That's what I want. And here's the thing, Agrippa. You know the prophets. I would tell you that that had to be the hardest day for Agrippa. Because I truly believe that Agrippa was at a spiritual crossroads. He had already understood scripture, but now he is hearing Paul's personal testimony. And I'm telling you, personal testimony is some of the greatest things we should be doing that we're not doing. And he gives that story of his change of life. And he looks right at Agrippa and he says, all I want for you is to be what I have. That salvation that comes through Jesus Christ. When we come to verse 4, I skipped verse 4. I want to come back and look at verse 4. Paul would say to the church at Thessalonica, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not to please men, but to please God who tests our heart. My goal is not to make you happy. My goal is to make God happy. I don't try to please the sheep. I try to please the shepherd. I understand that the world doesn't always like the message that has been given, but Paul says that we have a treasure in clay jars. And the clay jar is us, by the way. Go back and read the passage in 2 Corinthians. And that treasure is the good news of Jesus Christ. That treasure is inside of you. And you need to let others have that treasure. Sharing Jesus can sometimes bring some difficulties to life. And there are going to be some people that don't want to hear it. Now, I do think you need to learn how to say it correctly. I think there is speaking the truth in love and grace. But there are some who are just adamantly opposed. There are some and different causes within our nation and within the world today that absolutely hate Christianity and will want to do everything they can to destroy it. I understand that. I heard a preacher say, if you're going to carry the football, you better expect to be tackled once in a while. And he said it in light of a passage similar to this. If you're going to take the message of Jesus Christ out there, then you're going to have to expect that not everybody is going to wrap their arms around you and say, you're such a wonderful person. That's just what I needed to hear today. There's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to question your motive. And they're going to question you. And they're going to look for things that are wrong with you because they don't even like what's about themselves. And so it's easier to point the finger at you or to point the finger at God. Our role is not to please man, but to please God. So how does God see us as Christians? Well, according to John, we are his children. And that is love lavished on us. According to Peter, we are a royal priesthood, a holy people, a people who belong to God, his own possession. Who am I? I am saved. That is who I am. What about you? When you leave here today, do you have the same confidence? A confidence of salvation? A confidence that says, Jesus is walking beside me. Are you willing to walk out of here and say, I'm not going to quit, even though it might hurt some relationships I am in, even though it might change some friendships that I have? Are you confident in that salvation enough to say, I want the world to know who I am. I am his and I am saved. If we can give you that confidence by coming to Christ, won't you come and receive him?